This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of your very own A Lost Plot. I am your host, as always, Maverick, here with our wonderful guest back again. Thank you, Avalon, for being here.
Hello, hola, konnichiwa, and leho.
Now, today, we are discussing the recent release of the new Hunger Games prequel. That's right, it's The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, here for you today. It was written by Michael Leslie and Michael Arndt. Did I get that right? I don't know. I apologize if I did not.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see two Michaels all at once. But anyways, it was directed by Francis Lawrence, and it stars Tom Blythe as Coriolanus Snow, Rachel Zegler as Lucy Greybard, Josh Andres Rivera as Sejanus Plinth.
Sejanus Plinth.
And Peter Dinklage as Casca Cass Highbottom. So, you know, a lot of great, great names in there, and we'll see more as it goes along. But before we get into the rating, Avalon, tell us the truth. What's it about?
So the Hunger Games, the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes takes place, like, it's like the 10th annual Hunger Games, so about 65 years before the events of the Hunger Games books, the trilogy that we all know. And it follows Coriolanus Snow as he is put in the role of mentor to the tribute of a girl from 12, District 12, for the 10th annual Hunger Games. And more or less, it's him trying to win, trying to achieve a name for himself and like rise up above his poor status in Panem. But at the same time, he starts to develop feelings for this girl who he's mentoring and trying to help through the games.
That's pretty much it. So Overall, on a scale of 0 to 9, what would you give this movie?
My score is at like almost a solid 7.
My rating is at a 6.85. So,
Okay.
There we go. Pretty close. But let's get into why that's the case. So, the opening of the movie. Did the opener open in a way that caught your attention and was engaging? What made you want to keep watching what was going on?
I thought it was a very interesting opening, especially for people who are familiar with the Hunger Games, more or less, the story in the world. Just because it kind of takes place, the very opening shots take place before even the Hunger Games start. It's kind of like this, it's just showing hardship and like destruction and pain in Panem before the, like, it's almost like there's a war going on, there's fighting, and it's like, you're shown a very, very young Snow, Coriolanus Snow, who's like trying to survive with his, I think it's his sister, Tigress?
It's his cousin.
It's his cousin, that's right. And I should know this. I've read the book. But they're trying to survive, and it's like it kind of gives you this very bleak look at Panem, where it's like a fight for survival, more or less. And then it cuts ahead, and it says, while they have a house now, they have a home. They're still like trying to survive day by day. Like they're not. They may live in the capital of Panem, but they're not. They're definitely like the lowest class of people.
Right. Well, it's almost like they're, well, my impression anyways was that they are on the verge of lower class. They were at one point upper class, but their debts are threatening to drag them into the lower class. So, it's kind of an interesting situation for the family there. But I would agree. The opener was pretty good. It's very good at, especially if you do have some background. I read the first Hunger Games book, but I haven't read anything else beyond that. Obviously, if you've watched the Hunger Games series, then that's helpful for a background for you. But if not, this movie still has some merit on its own. The opener was really good at showing that perspective when there was that civil war that was going on. And the fact that there was such dire starvation was heightened by some of the things they showed there. So as an opener, it was pretty interesting to give that background for the characters. I thought it was engaging. What about the main character? Did you think that he was compelling? Was he compellingly flawed? What did you think of Corio?
I think he was a very interesting character because he's very... I mean, because he is poor, but it's almost like he cares about his family. He cares about his grandma, his cousin. He's trying to look out for their needs. Like, there is genuine, like, concern for some of these people. But he's also going to school, like, trying to get an education and just so he can lift his family up. But it's also somewhat of prejudice, where it's like, he doesn't, like, he definitely looks down on people from the districts, even though he's, like, the lowest of, like, one of the lowest people in Benem. He still has this idea, it's like, oh, I'm of the capital, I'm not of the district. So it's like, he's, even though he's this poor person, he's also kind of got this arrogance already from the very beginning of the movie. It's not overt, but it's there. It's like this, and it's a societal thing too. So it's not like he stands apart from anyone. It's just this thing that he, like, even though he tries to be a good person, he still has these societal issues that he's believed in or like taken up.
No, definitely. And that's an interesting point, because my understanding of him as a character is, when I was thinking of how flawed he was, I wasn't even thinking of his prejudice, because he does show some care for some of the people who are lower than him. He's not completely heartless, right? He has some soul to how he acts. But at the same time, he's one of those guys that's do whatever it takes to win kind of guys. So he's willing to bend the rules. He's willing to break the rules if it gets him where he needs to go. And so that was one way that I thought he was interesting as a character. And to see that play out to its full extent in this movie is also very interesting. What did you think about the side characters?
This was a very interesting situation for this movie, because they are characters who have their own motive in a way, but they're kind of similar to Coriolanus Snow, where it's like they're all trying to win. They're all like his like rivals, antagonists in certain ways. And they all kind of have their own like goals and agendas, but it doesn't like their unique goals or agendas. It's not like they stand apart some of his classmates or anything like that. Like only a few of them stand out, like Sejanus, who's like the only one who's not actually trying to win. He's the one who's like, who used to live in the districts. So he actually cares more about the people there. So his goal, more or less, is to change things, like make things better. But like some of the other like classmates who I'm like, actually, like, you look at IMDb at the cast list, like I recognize the names because I've read the book, but I don't, like, I can't tell who is who necessarily from the screen, because like they don't really have a lot of character development in the movie.
And I wouldn't say in my mind anyways that most of the classmates that are, and for the background of the people who are listening, the role that happens in this movie is that the class that is supposed to be graduating, usually the highest performer gets a prize and they get all this money and whatnot. And Coriolanus Snow was the more or less the expected winner of that prize. And this year they changed the rules and said, well, as a matter of fact, actually, there's one more thing you guys have to do to win this prize. And it's, you guys are going to mentor the people in the Hunger Games. So his whole class is there, right? Because he's working with alongside them to try to make his specific candidate win. But at the same time, I didn't think a lot of them were main or even side characters in the same sense that we would think of as allies or those kinds of things. Some of them were, like you said, Sejanus, maybe the one girl or two of the girls that he interacts with pretty prominently in the movie. I would say some of the more relevant side characters, which might not even be side characters depending on how you view this, but Lucy Gray Baird, who's the one he's mentoring. Casca Highbottom, Volumnia Gall, who's the main creator of the games. You know, these different characters have definitely their own motives, are definitely well motivated to do what they're trying to do. And I would say that those characters who are playing a prominent role alongside Corio did quite well. So I was very impressed with the whole cast in this movie. I thought they had great character development. I was very happy with what I saw.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. So
nice. So setting, what did you think of the setting? Did you like the setting? Did you not like the setting?
It's an interesting, I mean, cause it's the world of Panem before the Hunger Games. So like there are certain things that are different and there are certain things that are the same. And in a way you see the things already coming into play. Cause this is kind of the idea of the story is how the Hunger Games become what they are for, like, the trilogy, like, for Katniss Everdeen shows up. But it's like, this is the first year that mentors are used for the tributes. Like, before this, they weren't used. So this is a new thing. They're testing ideas. So it's like, you see familiar things going on, like in the arena and such. But then there's like these things that are like, okay, but they don't. Like, even like the tributes, the donations kind of thing. It's like, this is different. Like, this is not the same thing.
I think that there wasn't nothing, especially if you're familiar with the other movies, it wasn't anything exactly different. And I thought that the setting overall is believable, which is what you're looking for when you're looking at the setting of a movie. So I thought the opener was solid. So it got strong points from me at the beginning. In regards to seeing an obstacle in the way to what he wanted, was there did he have a lot at stake in this movie?
Yes, he does. Because it's like his very reputation, like his life, his dreams, his goals are all on the line if he doesn't win. Like he's been, like before the announcement that they're going to be mentors, he thinks he has it in the bag. Like he's going to win the prize. He's going to support his family. He's going to rise up. And then this whole like Hunger Games, like tribute thing, like completely screws over his plan. So it's like, now he has to win and he has to make sure that he wins the prize somehow. Like, so like he does have a lot on the line at this. And if he doesn't win, he is going to lose quite a bit.
No, I definitely see that for sure. Was there anything in particular that you saw that was really important to him that maybe changed throughout the movie?
Well, obviously, like once we're introduced to Lucy Gray Bear, his tribute from 12, at first she's just his tribute, where it's like he's like trying to like establish her like as a person people should rally behind and support. But then as it progresses, the story, he begins to actually care about her and like who she is as a person, and like starts to actually root for her to win the games just so she can survive. And so some of his goals kind of change because suddenly he finds someone that he actually cares about and grows to love.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that you see that in other ways too, where he as a character, what is at stake goes back and forth definitely between her and then his family, which is something that's very important to him. And you see that especially with Tigress, whatever her name is. So his cousin, right, who's very important to him, is a really mouthpiece into his life. And she speaks into who he's becoming and says, there's all these great things about you, and you don't have the negative qualities of our father in him, which is like this background of hate or violence that she saw in his eyes. And that is a prominent thing that they actually bring back later in the movie, where you see, oh my goodness, he's turned, and now she says, you're exactly like your father. And that means so much because he's changed in what he's valued throughout this movie. So yes. Very, very interesting in that regard. I thought anyways.
Yeah.
The villain. What did you think of the villain of this movie?
Well, this might be an interesting point, but who exactly, like, because the main villain obstacle, you could argue, is Dean Cassius Highbottom in some regards, because he is kind of established as kind of the antagonist, like the villain, like the person who's against Coriolanus. Like he has it out for Snow, and he's like, he wants to see Snow lose. And it's like and since he's actually the judge of this competition, he has the ability to like completely make things as difficult as possible for Snow. He has the ability to like screw him over at every possibility that he can. And he tries to many times. And in a way, he does succeed at a midpoint when he actually gets him exiled to District 12 for cheating. But at the same time, I don't know if I'd say he is the main villain, because in a way, at some point, it becomes clear that Snow is fighting against himself. Like, he's having to choose between what he wants. And in a way, he's kind of his own villain, his own obstacle. Where it's like, because as he grows to care about Lucy Gray Baird, he has to decide, does he actually want to be with her? Does he want a simple life in 12? Like, because he could have that and even be happy. Or he could go back, try to get back to his life in Panem, to his life of opulence, to his life of ambition, and try to prove all those people who hurt him wrong, like try to go back to that.
Right.
So like he has to choose between these two warring desires. And so it's like he is kind of his own worst enemy, where it's like, what does he choose?
Yeah. See, and that's interesting. The internal conflict, it's definitely a part of it, but it's really not a part of it until the end, I would say. Is that what you would agree with?
Well, that's why I said I put those two down, is because in the first part of the movie, it's mostly against Highbottom, like Peter Dinklage's character. Mm-hmm. Like, that's mostly where the conflict resides. But once he's in 12, Highbottom's not there. So it's like, he doesn't really have an impact really there. It's mostly like the conflicts there, the day-to-day life. And it's like, if you see Coriolanus Snow changing as a character a little bit, and it's like, that's when it becomes the conflict between himself at that point.
I think I agree with that. It's very, yeah. Yeah, because it's very interesting in this movie. The biggest, maybe, frustration I had with this movie, if any, just watching it, was that the villain aspect wasn't clear. And that doesn't... That isn't necessarily a bad thing, right? To say, oh, well, something's not clear, because sometimes things are inferred, and I don't think everything being clean cut is necessarily needed in a movie. In fact, sometimes it's better if it's not. But in this case, it wasn't clear what he was striving against, specifically in Act 3 compared to Act 1 and 2. And that was probably the biggest thing that stuck out to me, because you could, just thinking about this movie, you could take literally chapters 1 and 2, which they show it in the movie, chapter 1 and or part 1 and part 2 and part 3. They show in part 1 and part 2 a completely different side or aspect of his life compared to part 3. And so you could, hypothetically, cut out part 3, remove it from the movie, and part 1 and 2 would still be a cohesive story, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting in that way to say, okay, well, this could still be cohesive, but it would be a very different story. So, yeah, especially because you did say Casca Highbottom does disappear after that. So he's not really a relevant part. I was trying to, in my mind, make it cohesive with this idea of he's just against society and the rules that they've set up in place against him, which is somewhat cohesive across the whole thing. But I still don't think it completely justifies it. And in some ways too, he's against the Volumnia Gall, right?
Oh yeah,
the creator of games. Like she's in some ways his allies, but in some ways she's also someone he's fighting against to get what he wants. So it's the dynamics are interesting. I'll leave it at that. I still gave it a lot for this point, because I thought that the villain was overall still a compelling driving force to who he was and how he acted in his life, but it wasn't clear.
I agree with that. I mean, it's like not like there's a clear-cut villain, like clear-cut antagonist for him. Like it's, and maybe it is, as you said, maybe it is society. But the other thing is, like, this is this movie, this story, it's an origin story of a villain, where it's like you're seeing someone become not a good person, but a bad person. Like they're changing and becoming worse. I guess in a way it's like, you're looking at the villain of the villain in a way, like you're seeing the people who set him up to become someone worse.
Right. Which that point being the villain of a villain is interesting, just when we'll revisit that later on. Mm-hmm. But and maybe it's because I don't have a problem with it being the villain of a villain. And I haven't, maybe as a comparison, but, and I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but just based on my recollection of The Joker, I recall that movie being a little more cohesive in its progress of the character and the motivations behind the character from beginning to end. Versus this one, I thought that the third part was a little disjointed from the rest. And so that made it specifically hard to say, what is he fighting against? And maybe that does go back to just him as a character and who he is. So I don't want to belabor the point. I don't think it's worth getting bent over about. Obviously, I still thought it was a great compelling force against him, great obstacle in the way. It was just very weird how they switched it. That's all I wanted to make.
No, and I see that, yeah. And maybe it's my, like, having read the book, I don't see it as clearly as you do, so, because I have, like, this double vision, more or less, to see the book and the movie.
Right, so. And I'm sure the book has way more context and maybe a smoother transition between the sections that makes it a lot more clear. But yeah, I mean, if you could give it 0.5 points out of the 9-point system, I give it 0.4. So it still got most of the points for me. And if you guys want to rate movies yourself, see how we rated the movies, you can check that out at www.alostplot.com/9points. It's available to anyone, so you can legitimately, just review movies in your own way. See what you think of movies and give that analysis. That's literally what I used to make this analysis today. So, yeah. Anyways, back to the pod.
Outbreak.
Yeah, that's right. Does the hero, what does he, or what does Corio stand for in this movie?
Because of the, like, different villains and, like, the change in the story, it is kind of hard to say he defines a particular ideal, I guess, perchance. I mean, like, maybe ambition, maybe the need to win. I don't know. Like, maybe, like, if he... I don't know exactly what, if you could say there's a specific ideal he stands for. I guess maybe it's hard to say, like, it's the ideal that pushes him into the fray, like, gets him to do the right thing. Like, because it's like he's doing this for his own ends. He's doing this for his own selfish reasons.
Yeah.
Even from the beginning. Like, it's not like he's doing this because it's the right thing to do. Like, he's just trying to elevate his life. He's trying to achieve his own goals, his own dreams. And so, and admittedly, he has some good goals, like his family, as we said, like he wants to lift them up out of poverty. So it's not like he's like selfish and like, oh, doesn't care. He does care. It's just he doesn't enter the situation because of moralistic reasons.
No, not at all. And he's definitely very pragmatic about a lot of the things he does, or you know, okay, we have to get into this situation or out of this situation or whatever it is. Definitely would agree with that. I think there is some basic continually driving motivation behind how he's always trying to provide for his family, right? Or something along those lines. And so I gave it some points for this, but it's usually this is just a yes, no. Does he stand for something or does he not? And this one was one of those situations where it's like, well, this character is messy. And that's obviously intentional because we're creating a bad guy in this movie. So, you know, what can you say? But anyways, he got a couple points, but he really wasn't clear what he stood for. Is the goal for the movie important for his life specifically? Does he see it as something that's very important for him?
Well, yeah, he does. I mean, I do think it's interesting, though, like, after a certain point in the movie, like, what he wants, whatever, like, he kind of has two different goals that he could choose, and no matter what he chooses, he loses the other one. So, we kind of already said that. It's like, either happiness with Lucy Gray, or going back to the capital and getting his life back. Like, he has to choose between one of those two, and no matter what he chooses, he loses, in a way.
And even beyond the Lucy Gray part, just for his family, which is another, I think I refer to that specifically because that is one of the things that is cohesive throughout the entire movie. But yes. His family is one that he really needs to create a future for, and something that he actually had at one point with his father, which in some ways it indicates that he was a big inspiration to Coriolanus Snow. And so he wants to bring back the quote-unquote glory for the family that his father had brought that they no longer have. So, it's, and his entire family's livelihood is at stake. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Quick note. Hope you're all enjoying the podcast. Before we get back to it, would love to get some feedback from you for us. That's right. We're looking for reviews. If you could just give us 5 seconds of your time,
hit the little stars in the app that you're listening to it on right now, or give us a thumbs up if you're listening to us on YouTube or one of the other platforms such as that. Anyways, appreciate you guys' time helping us out, helping you guys get more of this great content. Now, back to the show.
What did you think about the tension in the movie? Did they consistently throw the hero from a good situation to a worse situation throughout it?
I think that is one of the consistent things. Like, that's another consistent thing about this movie. Like, it gets worse. Even after, like, because even through the games, it's like, as he's trying to get Lucy Gray to win, it's like, things get worse and worse, and he keeps having to, and he ends up cheating to help her win, and then it's like the Hunger Games ends and it's discovered he cheats, so then he gets exiled to the District 12 as a peacekeeper, like, supposedly he's going to be sent there for 2 decades or so, and he's like, okay, and then he reconnects with Lucy Gray while there, but then things keep getting worse even there, where it's like he has to deal with Sejanus, like, possibly stirring up rebellious groups and such. Like, he's having to deal with that. He's dealing with his feelings for Lucy Gray. It's just like all these complicated things going on in the district, and it's like his life gets more complicated. He accidentally kills the mayor's daughter. Well, no, he doesn't accidentally kill her, but like in a moment of panic. It's like a moment of panic where it's like, because he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, because he's going after Sejanus, and then she threatens them all, and he in panic kills her to stop her from saying anything, and then he kills her, essentially the mayor's daughter's boyfriend, and like it just complicates the whole thing for him, Sejanus, and the other guy who was present. And so like they're trying to hide the weapons and trying to hide the evidence, and it's like, and then it's like all these things are going on at the same time, and it's like it just makes the situation worse as the movie progresses till you get to the lake house scene at the very end of the movie.
It was really interesting at the end. And for those who haven't watched the movie, just the context is after the games are over and he's sent away for cheating rather than getting the prize because they saw that he did cheat during the games. And so he's supposed to be sent to a District 8. He bribes someone to give him District 12 instead. And that's where he meets Lucy Gray, who he was the mentor of. And in the middle, he gets caught up in these shenanigans with his best friend, Sejanus.
Oh, by the way, Sejanus also gets sent to District 12 because of, partly because of his actions during the games, but also because he kind of volunteers to do that because he's trying to find a new goal for his life. So he goes, like, his father's rich in the capital, so he's kind of well off, and he decides to make a difference. He's going to go to District 12, learn to be a peacekeeper, and maybe become an officer or medic or someone and start to make a difference that way. And so they meet up in District 12. They kind of become partners, but then Sejanus then starts like feeling for the people there who are under oppression and starts to try to help them any way he can. And Snow sees this and sees what it's going to potentially do to him if he doesn't step in and stop it.
Right. And it was really interesting, just that end scene you were talking about where Snow shoots the mayor's daughter because the guy who was standing by, which I can't think of the name of for the life of me, the guy who gets hung at the end of the movie. Also, as a... No, not Sejanus. The other guy.
The townsperson.
The townsperson.
I think his name was Spruce or something, but
yeah, it was Spruce. We'll just call him Spruce. It was interesting to me that in some ways this random guy that they met had a higher like ethical compass than Snow did, because even when he was being hung, he wasn't going to rat out Snow. And it was because he believed after Corio shot the mayor's daughter in the back that he was supporting a man who was for the cause, and he believed that supporting this man for the cause who was inside the military was far more important than his own life and trying to save it. And it was just interesting because he says nothing. Jon Snow, good night. Oh, different show. Coriolanus Snow says nothing. Spruce says nothing, and Spruce just hangs, and it just happens. You know, it was interesting to see all of that play out. And mm-hmm. you know, like he mm-hmm. thinks that he's saving a man who's going to make a difference mm-hmm. in the future of District 12, when in reality, mm-hmm. he's saving a despicable, despicable mm-hmm. man.
Yeah. I'm going to say, just like slide note, like that scene from the book, like, because that scene's in the book, that whole hanging scene, mm-hmm. like, I was kind of curious how they would play that out. And it's very interesting, like very kind of cool to see how it played out. It's also very haunting because like Sejanus is also getting hung next to him. And in the book, like same as the book, like he's freaking out, like crying out for his mom practically mm-hmm. as he's being hung. And like the Mockingjays who record, like can mimic the voices of people like in the trees. And like when he hangs, like all the Mockingjays start repeating his last like screams from the, hangman's noose. Mm. So it's like, it's this very kind of haunting moment where you're like watching the birds like scream, repeat the screams of his friend as he's like standing there as a peacekeeper. Snow is. It's like he's just like clearly torn, like clear, full of guilt because he technically, Sejanus is dying because of him.
Yeah. And that's big. I feel like we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but it's definitely, I definitely think that's interesting. In regards to big revelations in this movie, did you think there was any big revelations?
There technically is, and they tried to play it from the book, but I think the movie kind of maybe didn't stress it enough, maybe. Or I don't know, maybe you can weigh in on this a little bit. But it is like, he discovers, because he's afraid for his life, and Lucy Bird's like, she was, okay, for context, before she was sent to the Hunger Games, Lucy was the girlfriend of the guy who becomes the mayor as a girlfriend. The mayor's daughter, her boyfriend, before he became her boyfriend, he was the boyfriend of Lucy Gray. And there was jealousy from the mayor's daughter. It was obvious. And the mayor did not like Lucy Gray because of it. And so when the mayor's daughter turns up dead, as well as her boyfriend, the mayor suspects Lucy Gray for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. Lucy Gray did not kill them. She knows you killed them, but it wasn't. So she's afraid for her life. So she's going to escape before anything can happen to her. And Snow kind of agrees to go with her. And he's the one who actually killed them.
Right.
And when they get to the cabin, that's where he discovers the weapons that were used in the murder. Like, he discovers it's the gun that he used to kill the mayor's daughter. And he realizes, oh, wait, this is the evidence right here. If I get rid of this evidence right now, no one will know. Because all the other witnesses are dead. So Jonas is dead. Spruce is dead. Only Lucy Gray is the only other person who knows. And, like, so he's, like, in this position where he can actually choose, wait, I can go back to my life if I want to. I just have to get rid of this.
Did you, so because I don't have the background of the books, did Lucy Gray, because they play it out how Lucy Gray then responds, oh well, as long as, almost like a, oh, as long as I don't tell kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it plays out in the books?
This scene is definitely different from the books. The books, because when he goes into the cabin, like when he discovers the stash, Lucy is not with him. Okay. But she does know he goes into the cabin. And then when he comes out, also the conversation beforehand, because unbeknownst to him, this is the other shocker, like other reveal, I guess. Lucy knows what Snow did. She knows that he ratted out on Sejanus. She knows that Sejanus and Spruce is dead because of, Sejanus is dead because of Snow. He killed a boy in the arena. Like, she kind of knows like some of Snow's faults, and she knows he's some of the things he's hiding from her. And that and though she tries to get him to confess, he doesn't. And it's kind of this reveal that so when he goes into the cabin, she already knows this. He does. Snow doesn't realize she knows this. And when he comes out with the gun, it's only when he starts looking through the woods for her that he starts to reel and discovers like some things that happen, begins to realize she knows.
it's an interesting ending.
Mm-hmm. And also another side note, the song The Hanging Tree, which is everyone who's seen The Hunger Games knows the song.
Yeah.
That song does come into play in the books, but not until the very end. They introduced the song way too early in the movie, but in the books, Lucy Gray writes the song because she knows what Snow did, and it's more or less her indirectly saying, yeah, I know, like, saying what Snow did.
Did you feel like the ending that was right there, especially when he turns, starts shooting, was that a surprise ending?
So when he starts shooting, well, I think when he starts looking for her in the woods, it's like, and then the snake bites him in the cloth, mm-hmm. his mother's scarf. He realizes she did that intentionally, and he starts to think she is his enemy, like that she's going to tell on him. So, and in the book, it's a little bit more clear, like, he's starting to become antagonistic towards her. He tries shooting her, he thinks he shot her, but then he goes to the spot and she's gone, and he's, like, looking for her, and then he hears her voice singing the Hanging Tree song, and he can't find her, and then the birds start taking it up, start singing it too, so he has no idea where she went, what happened. He doesn't know if he mortally wounded her, he doesn't know if she's just hurt. If he missed, like, it's all almost like it's this very intentional mystery that's like he doesn't know, even as, and the audience doesn't even know, but like that is intentionally left vague,
right? What happens to Lucy Gray? No, it is an interesting ending. And maybe the books have a greater context for it. I think his snap, it wasn't
believable.
It was like semi-believable in my mind. So I didn't really like mark it down a ton for that, but it was definitely a situation where I almost went, okay, this guy is so cold and calculating all the time that for him to just go berserk like this is not really likely for him. But at the same time, he has gone through a lot to be where he's at right now. And so for him to have all of this weight of Sejanus dying and him feeling like Lucy Gray has betrayed him and losing his family's, like, being in District 12, not being near his family, and his family being in the middle of poverty, right? Like, all of these things weighing down on him, it would make sense to say, okay, he snapped right then, and that's what broke him. I don't know. I wasn't fully convinced. I wasn't unconvinced. It was one of those things that I was like, eh. I think you can make a case either way.
And I admit, as I said, I kind of have double vision where it's like I see the book and I see the movie. So it's almost like it was when I was writing this review, it was like I was trying to separate what I knew of the book from my view of the movie. And that became difficult at times.
Right. So. And a 7 for you, a 6.85 for me is not bad at all. Like, that's a pretty freaking good rating. So I don't think it's a bad movie. It was just one of those things that it caused me to call into question what we were doing here. So yeah, anyways, does the movie have a surprise ending?
I guess in a way his return to Panem is kind of a surprise, where it's like, I mean, it is kind of a surprise in the book where it's like he gets called to the capital instead of sent to District 2. And it's like Dr. Gall summons him in and reveals, like, oh, I kind of, like, she let him get sent to the District 12 just so that he'd learn some things out in the real world. So, like, she gets him a pardon, like, for his actions, and just so he can come back, and just so that she can have him learn under her, like, because she wants to teach him.
Yeah, and there's also a sense in which it seemed like she was still testing him to see what his trustworthiness was. What did you think of the whole interaction between him and her at the end where she goes, oh, you really proved yourself when you turned in Sejanus, and he goes, oh no, I didn't mean to do that?
Well, in a way he did, but in a way he didn't, where it's like he kind of like took advantage of the situation where he had the bird record everything Sejanus said in their conversation, and he knew that there could be consequences. He just didn't expect it to lead to Sejanus's death.
Yeah, because that felt kind of dumb. Like, you're an idiot if you don't think your friend's gonna die for saying those things. So I don't know, and this is the one part I didn't think was very believable. So in this movie,
I'll say another thing about this movie compared to the book. there is more interactions with Sejanus's family as opposed to the book. I mean, the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, his family is a wealthy family. His father has a lot of influence. And there's definitely this whole aspect where it's like his father, like, gets him out of certain situations because of his wealth and a power and how much he's done for the capital, for Panem. Mm-hmm. So the movie kind of touches on this and kind of alludes to this many times. And you briefly see his parents to the side at one point. But it's like the parents have a bigger role in, I mean, not that they have a big role, but there's a little bit more going on, I think, development wise with the family. So I think in that regard, Snow kind of just gets the impression his father is just, Sejanus's father is just going to fish him out of there. He's just going to get rescued.
Right. And he says something along those lines in the movie, but you don't get that same perspective as you probably would based on what you're saying in the books, right?
Yeah. So like, it's kind of a little bit of a surprise to Snow when he finds out that Sejanus is actually going to get hung for his crimes. And it's like, he's actually going to die. Like, his father's not going to be able to rescue him this time. So, I mean, in that regard, I mean, not that Snow is stupid, doesn't think that. He knows what Snow, like, normally this would be a death sentence, but I think Snow just assumes that Sejanus is going to get rescued by his parents again. So.
Yeah. So. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. And another thing about the movie versus the book, the very end, they don't show this in the movie, but part of the reason that Snow is able to regain some of his stature and a reputation is because after losing Sejanus, his parents, believing that Snow is Sejanus's best friend, they decide to adopt him and to make him part of their family. So he gets access to all this wealth at the very end of the movie because the Plinth family brings him in, and they bring his cousin in and his grandma in. Like, they just make them part of their family now because they think, oh, you are his best friend, and we want to honor that. We just want to help you out because you are such good friends with him.
Interesting.
So the movie doesn't touch on this, unfortunately, so you don't actually see that. Though it does show Snow in a different state of life at the very end of the movie. It shows him, like, doing much better.
right. Much wealthier, better off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, in regards to going back to endings, because that is interesting. I think that there was a little more that stuck out to me. And that was specifically in regards to Casca Highbottom. Now, yes. Casca Highbottom was, in my mind, the highlight of the end and how the end had a big, maybe, change. And part of that is also because Coriolanus Snow has changed throughout this entire movie, right? He's gone from being a good guy to being a bad guy. And at the very end, this arch nemesis of his, going back to being the villain of the villain, Casca Highbottom, is this character who he doesn't want Snow to win. And it's very clear throughout the entire movie. And he's fighting him, and he's trying to stop him, and he's trying to get him in trouble, and then he sends him away, and all of these things. And then at the very end, he comes to confront him in his drug-addicted state and goes, you know, the reason I hated your father is because he forced me into the situation where I had to do the games, and I didn't want to cause this type of evil. And so I was trying to stop the games and trying to make them less interesting and subvert the games so that the people would no longer carry out this tragedy. And you have subverted that. And it was so interesting because it took this character who was a villain, very clearly an enemy of Snow, and turn him into this guy who was genuinely trying to do something good for society.
And that is from the book, too.
Yeah. Well, it was just so interesting because you don't normally see obviously, there's not a lot of movies where the whole story is about someone going from good to bad. So that in of itself narrows the category a lot. But then again, to see someone who's quote-unquote the bad guy in the movie turn into a good guy at the end of the movie in a second was just so interesting. I really enjoyed that. I thought it was very fascinating to see. I thought it was a big revelation because it told a lot about one. It told a lot about Coriolanus Snow's father. It told a lot about Casca Highbottom. It told a lot about the society at large. So it was very interesting.
No, it's definitely a very interesting revelation. Very cool how it was played out. And it's almost like he's trying to do the right thing, trying to be the hero, trying to fix what the mistakes he made. In a way, he's like, this was like making Snow lose was like an attempt to like make the games go away. But now that Snow has won, he now knows the games won't go away. Like, he has failed. Like, it's like, and he knows that at the very end of the movie. And it's, and it's kind of sad in a way when you look at him and hear his words.
Because he's a good guy, but he lost.
Mm-hmm.
And you see his despair in some degree in the entire movie as he's his drug induced state where he's always taking whatever that
morphine stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then at the end, it literally kills him as you see that Jon Snow. As Snow probably poisoned it. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
No, the book does say he's poisoned it. He put the rat poison in it, and as he did before. And so it's an intentional thing to get rid of High Bottom. Because it's like his revenge against High Bottom for what happened.
So over in regards to transformation, did the hero grow as a person?
He changes as a person. Does he become a better person? No. And this is the one part of your question, like, I wasn't sure how to answer this, because it's like, well, he doesn't become a better person, he becomes a worse person. He changes as a character for sure, but he doesn't become better.
No, I definitely agree, he does get worse. I don't know, I think that's worth considering. The growing as a person is something that I think we want to see. I think that it's something that sticks in our minds better, but I do think that changing as a person, change is somewhat still something we value. So I'm definitely going to consider that, because that did stick out in my mind, and I put it in my notes when I wrote this here, was that that doesn't exactly reflect in a movie like this, or a movie like Joker, where the hero doesn't grow as a person, but he changes and becomes worse. But at the same time, is that, and I guess this is the question, right? If they get worse as a person throughout the movie, does that make the movie more compelling?
Yeah. No, I think it depends what the message, the point of the movie is. Mm-hmm. Like, even though Coriolanus Snow doesn't exactly stand for an ideal, there is an aspect where there is a conflict of ideals, like, of there's a message present, because it's like, he does, like, even though he wins, he loses happiness, he loses, like, he doesn't become a happy person at the end of the movie, he doesn't gain, like he doesn't find he loses the love of his life in a way. It's like he loses a lot of stuff, and so, like, even though he gets the ambition he wants, he gets the power he wants, he doesn't exactly become a happy person. He loses like, in a way, like, the message of the movie is the message of the movie is clearly stated at the very end of the movie, where he says the things we love the most is what destroy us.
And that's, once again, what you see at the end with his cousin, where she goes, I see you look exactly like father, right? Mm-hmm. And that reflects the hatred or evil that she saw in his eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just sees that he's fully embodied that now, that he has fully become his father. The thing that he aspired to be all his life, she warned against the full ramifications of that, and he didn't listen. Now he has fully embodied that in all of its worst forms.
Yeah.
So, themes. Does this movie have a theme?
kind of just said it. Things we love the most is what destroy us. It's kind of the idea.
Like, yeah.
The things you choose to love, the things you desire, like whatever you choose, like, it, if it's something bad, it will destroy you. Like, it'll, in a way, shape your life.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I wrote something similar. The ends do not justify the means, for in the process, the ends themselves are subverted. And so I think that was very much the idea of this movie was, like, you can't get away with doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great, great overall, I think, message. What was your overall takeaway? What did you think?
Oh, I was very satisfied.
Yes? You want to watch the next one? Have a nice one.
this is kind of a one-off story. You can't really go anywhere with this unless you like go with other characters.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like there's, I mean, obviously this leads into the Hunger Games at some point down the line, but mm-hmm. it's not like there's more story to tell of Snow's backstory. Like at this point, like where they leave him, it's like you can see how he goes from there to becoming President Snow, the leader of Pan Em, the villain of like that Katniss Everdeen eventually faces in the Hunger Games books, in the Hunger right. Games, like the 74th and 75th Hunger Games, like many decades later.
right.
So, like, you can see that it's like there's not really much to tell. There's not much more change to to showcase.
yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I thought it was good. I probably wouldn't watch it like as my favorite movie, but mm-hmm. I would watch it again. So it was a good movie, solid mm-hmm. movie. I enjoyed it. And I did love how much that they tied things into the future movies in the, mm-hmm. the slight foreshadowings, like the Mockingjays and mm-hmm. the songs and all those other things that you see in the later movies. They laid the groundwork very well in these, not in a way that was corny, but more in that it had a lot of meaning now, maybe more meaning now than what mm-hmm. it had previously.
Nice. And there's definitely a lot of foreshadowing in the book and in the movie where it's like, even just in the storytelling itself, like even they don't really talk about this in the movie, in the book, there's a lot of foreshadowing that Lucy is going to disappear. Like, and like, no one's not going to know what happened to her. Cause like there's this whole idea of like a disappearing bird or something. Like there's this whole thing. And Lucy Gray Barrett is like likened to a bird to the Mockingjays mm-hmm. and such. So it's like, it happened several times. So when she vanishes, it fits the foreshadowing that was placed earlier on where it's like, they kind of hinted, she's just going to disappear and you're not going to know what happened to her.
yeah. Based on this conversation, Alan, would you change your rating?
Not really. I mean, there really isn't much to change on. I mean, maybe 0.1 points. Maybe it would be last thing.
You don't have to fight for
yeah.
it.
No, I think same, I'm just going to leave it the same. It's still just a 7.0 for me.
I mean, mine's still going to be a 6.85. Great movie. Would recommend. If you're on Rotten Tomatoes, it's fresh. Go ahead and give it a look. yeah, and that's it. That's the pod. We hope all of you enjoyed this one. We will be back next week, as always. Until then, see ya.